Hi, so my name's Sam.
My name's Ashish.
And this is our new podcast that we're going to be doing, Debian and Stuff.
If I speak quickly, it's because I usually listen to podcasts at 2x.
All right. Oh, I will keep that in mind.
Great.
So we're going to get this out of the way at the beginning. We're going to be trying to do 3 podcasts by the end of the year. We're both busy people, and we're going to try to commit to that. We're going to be talking about Debian and stuff and other Debian things that interest us, but also Debian concepts and bugs. So let's start with talking about the infamous bug that apparently has been around a very, very long time.
Wait, can I first ask you, what is the title of this episode?
Oh, right, of course, sorry. The title of this episode is MediaWiki versus MoinMoin.
Great. It's going to be a really exciting episode.
Yeah, we're going to talk about a lot of really great things. Tell me about this bug that exists in Debian.
Yeah, so this is bug number 3773. The title is XLS Default Window Too Thin and Won't Go Away When Asked Nicely. It's from 14 July 1996, filed at 3 minutes after midnight UTC.
Jesus Christ, that is old.
By someone in the UK, so they were probably filing it around midnight local time. It's not like, yeah, they were staying up late trying to display some text. XLS is a program, so many of you might have used LESS, which is a command line tool to so-called page through a whole file of text, one screen at a time. That's what paging is about for terminal programs. XLS is like the graphical version of that as of 1996. So, you know, if you think LESS is great because you can like press up and down with the keyboard, XLS is even better because you can like click an up and down button with your mouse in some of the world's nicest looking graphical display widgets as of 1996.
Why would you rather click rather than use your keyboard?
Also, I think macOS and Windows totally looked nicer than this at the time. If you run this now, you'll find it's kind of like gray on gray.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That's
the pinnacle of X11 windowing toolkit design in 1996. Yeah. Things have gotten a lot better.
There's been a couple of years since then.
Yeah. So yeah, but the program, the bug.
I just want to put this out there, this bug is, I'm only 1 year older than this bug.
This bug, it turns out that for research I did a year ago at DebConf, they're trying to display a file of text that is 80 columns wide, and it actually displays 79 out of those 80. It's like so close. So this bug, I said, is still open. Maybe you said, I don't know. The best thing about this bug is that the person who filed it in 1998 is using a feature of the bug tracker to indicate that bugs are still an issue. And they've been using that feature continuously, actually, most recently in September 2008.
Wait. This guy is dedicated to this
bug. I know, we really wanted to fix this. So my friend Daff and I really wanted to get this bug fixed last year at DebConf, but it was like 11 p.m. and we like hacked for a while and then we couldn't figure it out. But it's probably the case that someone who's willing to spend like 2 to 8 hours reading some probably pretty reasonable C code could figure this out. And then fix it. And then they could submit a patch to the bug tracker.
So like the bug is basically that when you try to like look at this 80-column-wide error or whatever body of text in XLS, you just only get 79 of the columns?
I think that's right.
That sounds exceptionally frustrating.
The thing is,
you might be able to infer what it's saying.
Why else would this nice fellow named Richard, why else would he...
Kettlewell?
Continuing to leave notes indicating this bug is still a thing.
So, like, I want to know if he is continuously running the same command.
Okay, one other important thing, one other amazing thing, is that the version of XLS he was running in 1996 is version 1.7, with the Debian packaging release of 1.7-1.
Debian's kind of old. I didn't realize it was that old.
Debian's pretty old, yeah. This bug is, you know, I mean, it's bug number 3000-something, but you could say it's almost as old as the bug tracker. Anyway, he was running 1.7-1, and as of today, the bug is still found in version 1.7-14.2.
So what you're saying is in many, many, many years, we've basically gone almost no distance on the version.
That's right. The basically upstream, the people who maintain the actual code of XLS, have released zero new versions in that time period, which is kind of why it makes sense that it's still a bug.
Someone at the Linux Foundation is fucking up.
Well, this is the open group. That's what they're called, the open group.
Oh, okay. So it's not the Linux Foundation. So we can't blame Linus tomorrow at the Q&A here.
No, that's true. There is a Q&A.
Well, that's something to talk about. So this is our inaugural Debian related thing, and we're actually recording this at DevConf.
Kind of only, it's mostly true. We're recording it like one room away from DevConf in the Portland State University Computer
We've
Science
met
Lab.
Through DevConf.
Yes.
And we are recording it in relation, geographically close.
And
DevConf.
Temporally close. Temporally in the same place.
Quantum. In the quantum sense, we're everywhere is DevConf when DevConf is happening.
I mean, there's lots of people who participate remotely. People.
Oh, yeah, streamers. And people who watch the stream.
Yeah, streamers. People like running through the streets.
That's streakers.
Oh, okay. So, but we stream the conference live to all around the world, and we also record videos, and during the talks, people, you know, there'll be like 20 or some hundred of us or something in the room, and someone will say, I have a question from IRC, and that's because someone in, like, Germany wants to find out something with regards to the conversation going on in the room we're in.
Or they're saying, the audio is too quiet in the stream, and the video team needs to fix it, but then the video team, me, looks at it, and audio levels are fine, so then I respond in IRC, have you considered maybe checking the volume on your computer? And then the person responds back extremely embarrassed, saying, yes, my volume was down, because that happened to me.
That's great. That's superb, actually.
Anyways, this bug, though, we've come off track of it.
We have. XLS. So... Yeah, but you know the whole story now. Daph and I tried to fix this. We didn't succeed, but somebody else could. I think it's like 79 characters of 80. And one other interesting thing about bug 3773 is that when it was filed by email, because that's just how you file bugs in Debian, and they emailed debian-bugs@pixar.com.
Ooh.
Debian has had a long history with Pixar. We name all of our releases after characters in Toy Story, actually.
Oh, hey, Jesse. The next release is called Jesse.
The next release is called Jesse. The current release is called Wheezy, if I recall correctly.
Oh, yeah.
And if not, then I'll have to edit this out and say something else.
The name of this release is Please Pause for Correct Name Here.
That's right.
That's actually really cool. I did not know that. Learning new things. I'm actually not a newbie to Debian necessarily. I've been using Debian a long time, but I'm a newbie to, like, not just using Debian as an end user. So.
Oh my god. Sorry, I'm just reading the bug conversation.
Has it been going a long time? Like people are still talking about it?
Well, so here's how it goes. people were talking about it for about a year and a half, from July 1996 to February 1998. And then in 2008, 10 years later, the original poster is like, actually the bug still exists. I'm going to reopen it. So, yeah.
So my question is, if you just like ran the exact same string, like just like every, like, if you like on it, like maybe if he has like a life
Wait,
checklist.
Wait, there's a patch. There's a patch. Why didn't we, hold on. There is a patch. I mean... I'm sure Daph and I looked at this. Okay, right. So, there's a one-line patch that supposedly fixes this from 2008. It changes one integer that used to just be the value of base width. That used to be base width plus car width plus car width plus car width, and replaces it with just base width. Now, I have no idea if this actually fixes the problem.
So what is car width? Like, the size of your car?
I think it's the character, the width of a single text character.
Oh, car character.
Yeah, car. You'll hear me say car a lot. I mean, maybe not in this show. Actually, maybe in the show. But, I think that we must have tested this patch. By the way, this one-line patch. This one-line patch could have... I see one-line patches like this. 12 years, you know. It was submitted in 2008. It's now 2014. 12 years after this bug was filed, someone came up with a... I think that Daph and I tested this. And
who
I
is
think,
Daph?
David Harries, D-A-F-Y-D-D. He's a Welsh dude.
Welsh people are cool.
I agree. He's, earlier at the conference, someone was asking me, to identify some person anyway. And I said, he's a sort of tall, kind of boisterous. Yeah. I think it was Ian Jackson who I was supposed to identify. And I said, he's a tall, kind of boisterous British dude.
Ooh, Welsh or not British, big mistake.
No. I'm not saying this is like Daff. In fact, what came next, someone said, that describes a lot of people at this conference, which is true. Yeah, anyway, true. So Daff is a skinny, short, not very loud talking, but like, you know, self-assured enough to easily have a conversation.
Right.
Welsh dude. So very different.
Right, yeah, definitely. Distinct from the rest of our participants.
Yeah.
So I have a question about bugs.
Okay.
What is the current bug number like? For perspective, if this is 3,770...
Right, you might also be thinking, like, 3,000 is surely a lot of bugs for software to have, but...
No, of course not.
We're somewhere in the hundreds of thousands, the high hundreds of thousands. I don't think we hit a million yet, but I think we hit 800,000.
They were talking about in the report, the Debian project there, you were talking about how long it'll take to hit a million bugs.
How long will it take to hit a million bugs?
I think he said by Christmas. No, that was release of Jesse. Jesse by release at Christmas.
Okay, there is a 750,000 that was filed earlier this year by Holger.
Oh, hey.
Wow, this is awesome. He totally discovered this with an automated tool. Yes.
How do you know that?
Because, two things. One is the bug title says console setup unowned files after purge, policy 6.8, 10.8. And I know that there's a particular tool that he's worked on that I slightly worked on once 6 years ago at a different DevConf called PIU parts, that checks for when you install something and then uninstall it, and then you tell it, I want to fully uninstall this, are there still files left over? Which would be bad.
Right.
So PIU parts checks for that. So knowing that he works on PIU parts and this category thing just from the title, I figured it was from an automated tool. But I scrolled down and it also said, during a test with PIU parts, I noticed your package left unowned files on the system after purge.
Yeah, there's a relevant... I like Linux a lot. I use Linux a lot, but Windows is my day-to-day operating system because I'm terrible and don't care enough to use FOSS in my daily life.
Well, you probably use lots of FOSS, but maybe not as your operating system.
But there's a similar program for Windows called Revo Uninstaller Pro. They have a Pro and a not Pro version, but what's really great about it is I pretty much only ever really care about removing something like once every couple of months, at most.
I thought you were going to say year.
No, probably like every couple of months.
Okay. Is that just because you have, like, piles of disk space, so why bother?
Pretty much. Or it's just, like, I'm trying to install something because it's, like, bugging out and I want to fully remove it. So I use
bugging
the program.
Out.
But so the pro version comes, like, a 15-day trial. So I just download it, use it, and then...
No, use it to remove itself.
And then I uninstall something, and then I use it to remove itself.
Wait, I was joking.
I do that, because it runs it, like, in RAM or whatever, so it can do that.
Yes.
And then I close it, and it closes and it dies.
Yes.
And then, like, so, like, the last step of uninstalling itself is it crashes, and it's fine. Because, but the benefit of doing that is, the next time I go to install it, it doesn't know that I've already done the trial on my computer.
Amazing.
So, anyways, the next thing we should talk about, I think we've thoroughly discussed this bug. The next thing we should talk about is, should we do mostly true unsourced facts with SAMERGE next, or Debian concept?
Well, I don't care, because I just need to add that we should have a screenshot of this bug in action as part of the show notes.
Without a doubt, that will be there.
Great.
Can it be a GIF?
Like, animated? Or just, like, plain?
Just for no reason, we'll just use the GIF format.
I mean, that's what they had.
Actually, I'm sorry. In case he's listening, GIF.
Good. That's how I pronounce it, too, but I wasn't going to correct you.
No.
I have too many other things to correct you on.
Oh, good. I like being corrected. All right. So I think maybe should we go to mostly true unsourced facts with SAMERGE?
True.
So yes?
Yes.
Okay, cool. I'm like a script program where you have to be really specific about saying yes. Like, you can't do Y, and if you do a lowercase y in the word yes, then it's like no.
Enter.
There you go. Did you know?
No.
That certain kinds of frogs, during the winter, just instead of, you know, trying to stay warm or anything like that, they're like, ah, fuck it. They'll just sit in the pond and get frozen completely solid. And then, come spring, they thaw out. And then they're just like, ribbit, and hop away. Did you know that?
I totally did not know that.
Really?
Yeah, cryogenic, auto-cryogenic frogs.
That is a great way of putting it. They're literally cryogenic frogs.
Auto-cryogenic frogs. Question, well, I guess they're not freezing themselves. The water is freezing them.
Yeah, it's true. So the question is, are they older when they come out of the freeze?
So I could totally see this going both ways. Because on one hand, they're kind of traveling through time by freezing themselves.
Oh my god, they're Time Lord frogs!
Yes. But on the other hand, perhaps... So I guess it depends on if you think being frozen makes your body decay in some new ways that aren't related to like how your body decays being alive.
So I've actually read about this specific type of frog in the past.
Good.
But
I'm glad
this
because
is
it's
mostly
otherwise
true.
Reading in the future it wouldn't help you.
But because this is mostly true on Source Tracks with Sam Herbs.
Yeah.
I guess I'm giving my last name of the podcast now, but that's alright. I don't really care that much. I'm not that interesting.
Okay.
I have done nothing of note other than this podcast.
Yet.
And this isn't even of note yet.
Well.
Well, it might be. Anyways, so, by the time you, viewer, or reader, or listener, whatever, is listening to this, maybe this is an internet sensation. Maybe everybody knows us as Ashish and Sam, the amazing Debian...
And voice, stuff.
And stuff. Podcasters. So anyways, from what I understand about these frogs...
Yeah.
Their metabolism slows to nearly stop.
Okay, good. But but you're saying nearly.
Yeah, well, because like, they don't die.
Okay, good point.
I think when your metabolism stops, you're dead. Like,
yeah, yeah.
Corpses don't have metabolisms. So my question is, like, maybe this age in like slow motion.
They age in slow motion.
Just let that sink into your mind for a second. Slowly. My other question is, can they, like, perceive things as they're frozen?
Almost definitely not.
Yeah, but I kind of want them to.
You
want to,
like, tickle them, and then, like,
no.
Minutes later, they'll, like, react.
Not even that. I want them to, like, I hope that the way they perceive it is, like, in every animated show, where they do, like a sped-up timeline of, like, the seasons changing, and, like the flowers grow, and then they die. And, like, I hope that that's how they perceive reality during their freeze.
Like, it's just, like, their perception, they're passing through time at, like, 10 seconds per second. No, well, like...
More than that, but yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
That'd be cool. Like, have you ever seen Futurama? Like, you watched Futurama, right?
I've definitely seen Futurama.
So there's the scene, or there's, like, the episode where they invent a time machine, but it can only travel forward. And, but what they figure out is that at the end of the universe, everything just restarts exactly the same.
Oh.
So they just, but like, the joke is that they keep missing it, because they keep getting distracted by girls.
Oh.
Like, running.
Oh.
With their boobs bouncing.
I see.
Yes. So they miss it, like, 3 times, trying to get back to the present. And they have to, like, watch all of reality die, and then come back. And, like, speaking of Futurama... Have you seen like, the saddest episode of Futurama? Like,
is that the one? Hold on, don't tell me. Don't tell me. I'll tell you what I think. I'll tell you the Futurama episode that contains my favorite line, and maybe you'll think it's the saddest episode ever. So, at the beginning of this episode, Fry, the 20th century denizen who's been teleported forward to the future,
protagonist. I feel like anybody who's listening to our podcast is going to know what Futurama is.
It's possible, but like if they're like,
if not, please pause our podcast. And go marathon the complete series of Futurama. We will be waiting here when you get back.
But I can't legit recommend that, because it's like, I don't know, Motion Picture Association, maybe not literally, but anyway, it's like a...
No, the MPAA doesn't care.
It's like a copyright cartel-created creative work, which means that whenever you either find out about it or pay money for it, you're kind of encouraging that system to continue to own copyright in this country. But...
Okay.
I'll tell you. So
let's be honest here, though. Futurama was fucking awesome. So
sure.
Pause our podcast, go watch it on Netflix or torrent it or something. All right, welcome back.
Okay.
I hope you enjoyed Futurama.
But the episode. Okay, so Fry eats an egg salad sandwich from a gas station vending machine.
Oh, this episode is so good! And he gets the worms.
And he gets some worms because despite you know everyone else advises him don't do that. Why are you gonna eat the egg salad sandwich from the gas station vending machine? But he's hungry. Also, they still have gas stations in the future. And
but they're like space gas stations.
They are.
They fill you up with antimatter.
I don't even remember what
antimatter. It's antimatter.
Okay, great.
Because remember Nibbler, their pet. poop's antimatter, so if they're ever low, they top it off with this poop.
Wow, I did not remember that.
Yeah.
So now, part of the setup for the show is that Fry is totally in love with this person named Leela.
Who's a Cyclops.
Who is a Cyclops, that's true.
And a mutant.
I don't remember that.
She is, remember, she thinks she's an alien, but really she's actually from the underground where the mutants live.
Oh.
I feel like I've watched this more than you.
Clearly. So in this episode, an unusual thing occurs, which is that Leela actually thinks Fry is kind of cute, and it's because the worms have infected his brain. Being parasitic, they offer him something. They do offer him something in response for taking over his brain, and that is they make him super smart. Which turns out Leela thinks this is pretty cool. So he's playing this amazing instrument that
creates pictures.
Right? Yeah. When you, like, blow into it and make the right sounds,
things called?
These glorious holograms or something appear in the room. And then, like, you know, Leela, like, grabs him and scene cuts. But then he...
It's the holophoner.
The holophoner. Holophoner?
H-O-L-O-P-H-O-N-O-R. That has a fucking crap load of O's in it.
Oh. So...
Go ahead.
So then Fry realizes, he wonders for a moment, does she love me, or does she love the worms? So, he excuses himself from the bedroom, and goes to the office. And at the office, he puts himself under a shrinking ray, shrinks himself, and then eats himself, so that he can slide into his own bloodstream to confront the worms. And when he confronts...
Wait, isn't there, like, a problem with that?
No. Definitely
okay.
not.
Okay, get so I just found a picture of someone who's recreated the holophoner, so I'll put that in the show notes.
Great.
So people can see exactly the mystical... Oh, and it's the devil's hands that are holding it. This person really had attention to detail.
Looks like because pig hooves to me.
No, it's the devil robot, because in another episode about this instrument, he trades his something for the devil's hands. And in return, and the devil's hands allows him to play the holophoner really, really well.
Fry does?
Yeah.
Wow, I did not realize that. Okay, so...
At least I think it's Fry. It's either Fry or Bender, but I'm pretty sure it's Fry. Well, doesn't make sense for me, Bender. Go ahead.
Yeah. Nice. So the confrontation occurs...
Does Bender go with him into his body?
No, definitely not. Bender is actually somehow kind of missing from most of the episode.
That's weird, but go ahead.
Fry finds himself in his brain, and he confronts the worms, and he says...
He finds himself in his brain.
And he says, you guys need to leave, because I need to find out something. And they're like, ha 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 ha, no being would be stupid enough to destroy his own brain just to kick us out. Because they've, like, intertwined themselves
right, and then he beats
in
up
his
brain.
And, you know, in response to this challenge, Fry says, oh, yeah? Then he, like, starts slicing neurons and axons, and the worms
really
are like,
stupid.
Okay, you win.
I think it's slightly more complicated than that, but...
We'll leave. Okay. So he goes back and tries to play the holophoner.
Wait, I still am really caught up on the fact that he goes in his own body.
Whatever. So
how does that work?
Recursion. So base case, I guess, is maybe the answer.
He just uses like a pipe. He pipes himself in.
He eats himself in a capsule. I think he like turns himself into medicine. Like, you know, in a like plastic.
I'm gonna go with he's the pipe key. Yeah, pipe himself in.
Could be.
Because this is Debian and stuff.
That's true. Debian and stuff. And the worms have left, and he goes back to play the holophoner for Leela.
I think it's like holo. Holo.
Holo.
Like hologram.
Holophoner.
Holophoner. That sounds right. Go with holophoner. We're going to go with holophoner.
He plays the holophoner for for Leela, and like it shows this monster that then like farts and like collapses on its own ear.
Right.
And Leela's not very impressed. Fry has lost the only thing he ever really wanted in this century. A beautiful relationship. No, don't be ridiculous. A beautiful relationship with Leela. So, dejected, he goes to the office. And there we find Bender. And in the blink of an eye, we see Fry retell this story to Bender. And Bender says possibly the best thing to say to someone who's feeling like their life is just, they're not sure...
What to do at all.
He says, well, Fry, if it's any consolation, my life is great.
I love Bender. Do you know Bender's full name? Bender Benning Rodriguez.
Oh.
Because he was manufactured in Mexico. That's why his last name is Rodriguez. There's actually a whole episode where he has this one defective part of him, and then he goes all the way to the factory in Mexico with Fry and maybe Leela and other people, Fry definitely, to, like, find the person who marked him, because he has the little, like, piece of paper that says inspected by, and when he gets there, you end up finding out that it was Hermes.
Oh.
Who had inspected him.
Who's the character.
Yeah, he was one of the main characters.
He's also, like, quasi-Jamaican, right?
Yeah, he's not even quasi. I think he's full-on Jamaican.
Okay.
I mean, he still spells right as Kwanzaa. He also Jamaican me crazy. Anyways, and it's a whole thing. I don't remember more of the details, but there's a funny episode about, or funny part of the episode about administration and bureaucracy. Anyways.
What's the saddest one ever if it's not the one I just told you?
Oh, maybe you haven't seen it. I think I might be about to rock your world.
Sounds so, horrifying.
Beginning of the episode. Yeah, no, this blows that episode out of the water. Okay, at the beginning of the episode. Good news, everybody, blah, 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 blah. They go downstairs to the basement of the... They go down to the basement of the... Stop laughing. Can you laugh?
I just think the good news, everybody gag is so good.
Good news, everybody. It's we're like, closing. Anyways.
Good news, everyone. I'm lying.
So we go into the... or they go down into the basement of Planet Express.
Planet Express.
And they're drilling. I don't remember why. Maybe for oil, whatever. But they end up finding the fossilized remains of his dog.
Whose dog?
Fry's. From the 20th century.
Oh my god.
And then, the whole plot is like, Professor Farnsworth finds a way to bring the dog back alive, but it's unstable, so he ends up letting his dog die again. No. It gets worse. The final sequence of the episode is one of the few things that makes me cry, even just thinking about it. Like, if I think about it too much, I'll start crying. The final sequence is on the fateful night in the 20th century at 1Y2K. It's Y2K, right? It's 1999, right?
Yeah. I think so.
Yeah, in 1Y2K. He doesn't take his dog to go make the delivery to the cryogenics lab. He goes, all right, stay there, Scruffy, or something like that. And then he leaves, right?
Yeah.
And he goes into the crime machine, but it doesn't follow him in this cutscene. It's the dog. And the dog just sits there. Waiting for him.
Oh,
and the seasons
God.
Transition, and it gets time passes, and then the man who owns the pizza shop closes it, and ends up just petting him for the last time and walking away, and then the dog dies, sitting there in front of the pizza shop, waiting for Fry.
Wow.
It's amazingly set.
Oh my god.
Do you know what's impressive? I mean, like, I understand the cryogenics angle, but we definitely got from frozen frogs to dying dogs.
Wait, but those rhyme.
What?
Those rhyme.
Right, frozen frogs. Frozen frogs.
All right. Dying
I think dogs. It's time to move on to our second, mostly true, unsourced fact of Zamerbs.
Wait, but the dog thing.
Wait, you still want to talk about
yes,
that?
Yes. Okay. Like,
yeah, it's
like
fucking
sad. 3 years ago at DebCon, Anna, who's another Debian developer.
Anna Banana?
No.
Please don't be mad if you don't like that, Anna.
Okay.
And
I mean, I'm not. It's not me, but I'm saying okay.
No, I'm
just
telling Anna.
Just to move the topic forward. Okay.
Okay,
so,
cool. Go ahead.
Yeah. Anna, like, I guess, like, sat me down in wherever we were, in Banja Luka, in front of the venue, in the middle of Bosnia, and said, like, told me for a few minutes about how, like, Ashish, you, like, sometimes say these really excited things about the cool things that you'll do or that will happen, but then they don't happen, and then it's because you, like, got excited, moved on to the next idea, but you didn't tell anyone, and... One of my mentees in Spain just, like, waited for you to do this thing, and then eventually concluded you weren't going to do it, and it was...
Oh, geez, that's sad.
...kind of disappointing and painful, and I just wanted you to think about how you should think about...
Wasn't it great that we're actually following through on our idea to make a podcast? At least one.
At least one.
We've done one.
Yeah.
We'll see if we just forget to any others.
But that's why the sad dying dog story
made you think of
touches a chord.
Because you're not a sad dying dog. You're Fry that leaves your sad dying dog.
Strikes a chord.
There's a sad dying dog in Spain that wishes you would finish that project.
I don't even remember which one.
There are many sad dying dogs.
I know.
Because of you, Ashish.
That's what I'm saying.
I think on this terribly sad note about how Ashish is a failure in life, we will move on. Alrighty?
So the second
mostly true unsourced fact with Sam Herbs is, did you know that Dr. Seuss pronounced his name Dr. Seuss?
No. I so did not know that.
Really?
Definitely.
Yeah.
I mean, I could have thought it through, but I never bothered to, because all... So when I moved to the U.S. when I was, like, 7...
Oh, you were born here?
No, I was born in New Delhi.
Oh,
I lived in India for about 6 weeks, decided I'd had enough, so we moved to the U.K. And
hey, Mom,
then...
Dad, I ain't digging this.
Then my parents decided they had had enough, so we moved to the U.S.
Right.
And that was when I started hearing about Dr. Seuss, when I was living in Richmond, Virginia.
Dr. Seuss?
Well, I mean, that's when I started hearing about Dr. Seuss. Right. That's the thing. It was like this opaque collection of syllables that, like, a moment later was transformed into a written form, but I didn't know any German then. I didn't know anything about German pronunciation then.
Is he German?
I don't know. What's Seuss? Like, where is he based? Where,
sure, whatever.
Was he American?
Okay, with German. It's unsourced.
Okay.
Mostly untrue. No, I promise.
But
it's mostly true.
There's only two facts, so, like, the rounding kind of means they're all...
No, there's three facts in total.
Oh, okay.
I have one.
Good, good. But anyway, no, did not know that.
So, it just instantly makes me think of soy sauce. I'm sorry, but that's just a fact.
What? But they're like...
Soy. I wonder how other words he would mispronounce. Like, why would he mispronounce this? His name, he mispronounces it whatever he wants.
Wait, what? Huh?
I said, I wonder what other names he mispronounces.
Oh.
But, and then I realized it's his name. He pronounces whatever the fuck he wants.
Yeah.
You know, so the question is, maybe it's like...
Actually, I pronounced my name wrong.
You do?
Yeah. I say it Ashish, but it's Ashish.
Ashish?
Yeah.
That sounds more Indian.
Yeah.
I like Ashish better.
I like me too.
Aww. Anyways. So... I wonder if it's like, soim, I oim, green eggs in a hoim, or something. Maybe that's good.
I find that far-fetched.
Okay, let's move on to the third fact.
All right.
Half of all bank robberies take place on Friday.
So is this a quiz and I'm supposed to identify the lie?
No, it's just three facts.
This one, it's like, I have no reason to believe that.
I mean, it is mostly true on source facts with Sammers.
It's like, it reminds me, except I'll come back to how it's different. It reminds me of how, so there's this question people ask. In which month do people rob banks the least?
Is it, let me think. Is it December?
No, it's February, because there's fewer days.
Oh, shit!
So that one, there's like a reason to
for
it to be true. Although, then again, by your metrics, maybe, I don't know. But yeah, this one I like can't. I just don't believe.
Well, I mean, it's not that you don't believe it. It's just you have no reason to believe it over any other. Like, if I had said half of all bank robberies take place on Saturday, would that have been more or less believable?
That's actually kind of slightly more credible to me.
Why?
Actually, no, it's totally. Never mind. That's because I'm wrong. Like. Banks are less likely to be open on... Okay, banks are basically only open Monday to Friday. And, like...
It's not true.
Basically.
Basically.
Maybe where you live. In San Francisco, everything's closed Saturday and Sunday. Well, maybe not. Okay, but... Then mostly. They're certainly open fewer hours. There's fewer hours in which to rob them.
Friday. No. Half of all bank robberies take place on Friday. I have some thoughts about that.
Okay, but I definitely now think that Saturday... is less likely than Friday.
Okay, good. Now that you actually, like, think about how bank holidays work.
Yeah.
So, let's go on a limb and say this fact's about America, not the whole world.
Yeah, sure.
Because, I mean, like, Somalian banks, they get robbed every day. Did you know...
This reminds me of a story about my friend who, in Brazil, was in an internet cafe minding his own business, but then some guy...
What was he minding? Bitcoin of his own business.
Some guy was talking to the teller... And my friend Seth was like, oh, hey, maybe I can help him. Maybe he doesn't understand Portuguese. He seems to be speaking English, and she's responding in Portuguese. So he asked the guy, hey, do you need any help communicating? I can speak Portuguese. And he says, no, she understands me very well. The problem is that I'm using this phone to dial this university where I'm going to go to school, to a med school, and unfortunately, they're not picking up the phone. There's not really much she can do about that, but I'm hoping that, I don't know, we can think of something. He was like, huh. And then they talked for a bit, and it turns out he lives in Nigeria, and he's flying through Brazil in order to get to his med school, where he's enrolled as a student in the Caribbean. And actually, when he...
Is this a story about Hermes?
No. How does that make any sense?
Jamaica's in the Caribbean.
Oh, okay, good point. I forgot. And...
Okay, yeah.
Continue. Great question.
Okay, but, well, I edit this part out where I'm just saying random things. Go ahead.
So, yeah, so it turns out Seth is trying to help this Nigerian guy. And this Nigerian guy...
Is he a prince?
He's not... He doesn't say to me that he is a prince. there's no reason to believe he's a prince.
Does he have a large amount of money he recently inherited?
He does have a large amount of money on him, because he... brought the cash to buy the plane ticket.
And deposited into a bank after.
No, there's no banks involved. Because in Nigeria, you just like buy large...
related to banks?
You just buy large plane tickets. Great question, I've already forgotten. You buy large things with cash.
Right.
So he just like has a suitcase full of cash, and he walked up to the ticket counter to buy his ticket from Brazil to the Caribbean. But it turns out that this airline... doesn't fly directly to the island he needs to go to. Their partner does. And they can accept payment in cash, but they can't accept payment in cash for their partner's flight. They can only tell you to go buy the partner flights on the website. So he's in the internet cafe, trying to buy this flight to the med school he's already enrolled in. He's trying to get there. And at this point, Seth realizes, he doesn't have a credit card, but I have a credit card.
Oh, shit.
Anyway... long story short, it mostly turned out fine.
Did he buy this guy's plane ticket and then take a suitcase full of money?
He's not a whole suitcase full of money.
This ends in an Interpol warrant for Seth's arrest because of accepting drug money or blood diamond money or something.
I think there's no reason. Seth eventually got back in touch with the fellow. Seems like he's a totally upstanding fellow.
Nice. I guess it's countryist to assume that it would be blood money or drug money just because it's from Nigeria.
Yeah, that's the thing. The whole thing, like, screams sketch-tastic.
Sketch-mania. Sketch-fest Northwest.
But, yeah.
So, banks. How is that related to banks?
Because it's like this guy's his own bank. That's sort of the whole story.
So, no, what was I going to say? I wanted to make a tangent point. What were we talking about?
Friday.
I think it was just my theories, maybe.
Okay.
No, maybe bank holidays? I don't remember. Anyways, theories about why Friday is the most common.
Presumably, you know, thieves are getting excited for the weekend, and they realize, I can't afford it.
I can't afford to go partying. Why not just pop off the bank? So anyways.
If you're like me, you like, you know, plan for things mostly just before they're going to happen.
Well, I mean, that's how most people plan, to be honest.
Okay.
So, no, real theories.
Real theories, real facts.
With Sam's and Ashish last name that I can't pronounce.
Yes.
Mainly because I haven't taken time to look at it.
Yes.
All right. So, theories about why half of all bank robberies take place on Friday. Theory number one. It's because they're off work from their regular job.
Are people more likely to be off work on Fridays versus, like, Wednesdays or Thursdays?
Right, but they don't have work the next day.
Oh, the next day. Oh, because they, like, left at, like, 3 or 4 or whatever.
Right.
Okay.
So then they go rob a bank, and then they know the next day they don't have to go into work and be all jittery because they just fucking robbed a bank.
Wait, but how... Okay.
I guess I'm just assuming that... I gotta be honest here. I'm kind of coming from a place of bias, assuming that... a large percentage of bank robbers are, like, professional criminals from Ocean's 11, but I guess they're probably mostly just meth addicts with knives.
I think they're certainly not mostly professionals like in Ocean's 11. There's a large number of failed bank robberies, presumably, which suggests that they're not all professionals. Does your statistic include the failed ones? Actually, if it does, that kind of makes me more believe it more.
Mostly true unsourced facts with Sam Herbs.
Okay, perfect.
So
I'm going to go with yes.
I have three related things to say. First of all, there's a funny, hilarious Monty Python, Fire Sign Theater bit, where a man walks into a bar. Banks, a man walks into a bank.
Oh, I thought it was a joke.
No, I didn't mean to do it. A man walks into a bank and tries to rob the bank, and he hands a note to the teller, and it says, "I have a gub," because he misspelled it. And the bank teller doesn't take him seriously, and she laughs. And it's amusing.
That's the whole story.
That's the whole story?
Wow.
Nah, it sounded better before I said it.
It probably is, like, better as theater.
So, other theories about why... I know I said I do other things, but I forget them. So,
theories... Like me and the story with Anna.
Yeah.
I think I probably blogged about it.
Don't look at your blog right now.
What? But I... Fine.
So, two other theories. Actually, I don't know how many more theories.
Okay. And your third theory?
Oh, he's gonna skip.
Yeah. There's more bank holidays on Monday, so it decreases the average?
I'm gonna make something up. Alright. My third theory is that the reason over half of all bank robberies take place on Friday,
yeah,
is because guards want to get home to their families, and therefore there's less guards. A, there's less guards, and B, the guards are paying less attention.
Right. Like, if you take my angle, it's more like robberies are attempted on Fridays because the people who have, you know, left work early are like, oh, maybe the guards will leave work early. But since this statistic also includes failed robberies, it's like nope.
So something else to consider. Maybe Friday has to do with there's a lot of money in the bank.
What? Oh. There's going to be money in the bank no matter what. It's a bank.
Oh, wait. Yeah, that's how banks work.
I mean, they might, like, clear out the teller.
They do. No, but also they give money to the United States Treasury.
I thought you said they give money to the homeless. I don't know why.
They also give money to the United States Treasury.
Yeah.
And maybe that happens on Friday. I don't think the bank robbers know that, though. So speaking of, we're
going to make your statistics true if it weren't already.
So speaking of Ocean's 11 and Ocean's 12 and Ocean's 13.
Okay.
And maybe Ocean's 14? I don't think so. I would definitely watch Ocean's, 99 and all...
So when you say Ocean's 99, I think of Ranch 99, which is the, massive Korean supermarket. Where they have, coconuts and...
Are coconuts
I don't know. Random British chocolates and, lots of kinds of rice.
So anyways, though, what I mean is, I'd be more than willing to watch hundreds of Ocean's 11 movies because I love those fucking movies.
Wait, but there'd be so many thieves, right? Isn't that the number of thieves? Where would you put them all? It would take so long.
There's a circus troop of thieves. Is it even a thief? I feel like it is.
I mean, in the first one it was. I haven't seen the later ones.
I can only assume that it's the community.
I really enjoyed the first one, though.
The others are as good.
Okay.
Honestly.
That's pretty amazing.
Well, they all got Brad Pitt in them, so.
What did you say?
Don't they all have Brad Pitt in them?
Yeah. Probably.
Brad Pitt, George Clooney, Matt Damon, all people I love. That's all of my mostly untrue. No, sorry, mostly true unsourced fact examiners. The next thing we're going to talk about is a Debian concept that I don't know about, but you do, because you're a Debian developer and I'm a random guy that showed up at the conference.
It's all true.
The packaging system. Tell me about the Debian packaging system.
The Debian packaging system, when you run apt-get install Iceweasel, for example, which is the Debian version of Firefox.
I hear that Iceweasel has a bug.
Iceweasel?
Has a bug.
No.
The problem is that Iceweasel only renders 79 of 80 columns.
Give me a break.
No, there's a real bug I don't know what actually it is, but in a talk 2 days ago, maybe, this girl was talking about, from Brazil, related to her earlier stories. This girl was talking about her thing she did for Google Summer of Code, which is like a VoIP thing.
Okay, cool.
And she said that it currently only works in Chrome and Firefox and Opera.
But not Iceweasel?
For some reason, because of the way in which Iceweasel renders or handles something.
Wow. So Iceweasel is supposed to be pretty directly in line with Mozilla Firefox, so I don't really know what's up. But
so what is the difference between Iceweasel and Mozilla? I forget.
So Debian Iceweasel is Mozilla Firefox, the same source code, with slight changes to remove the branding. The key idea here is that in 2004, awesome internet thieves realized Firefox was a free of cost open source thing. So they were like, hey, we can trick Windows users into installing not Firefox, but fake Firefox that like logs all our keystrokes and ejects our CD-ROM drive at random times and also gives us lots of money.
Nice.
I don't know the details, but that's basically the image you should have in your head. And Mozilla was like, well, this sucks. We didn't make an open source product called Firefox just so that other random people would use it to trick other people into giving them lots of money. So,
also ejecting their CD drive.
Seriously. By the way, that was my favorite thing to do when I would install Netbus or Back Orifice or other Trojan horses on my friends' computers in high school.
Yeah.
I even wrote, when I was at the computer club, I wrote a program. I made a line in inetd.conf so that when the machine was port scanned on like port 999, if the port scanners hit that, then inetd would eject the CD-ROM drive. So you could, like, it's an early warning system.
Nice.
I just love ejecting CD-ROM drives. You can't really do that anymore. But
most computers don't have CD-ROM drives.
They don't even have DVD drives. So there was a period where the CD-ROM to DVD transition occurred, but now we're like all post that.
The post-physical media era.
Computers can't even see. They have no optical media. Well, no, they all have webcams.
Anyways, continue.
So the difference between iSqueezle and Firefox, it then stems from Mozilla adding these rules to the distribution of Firefox about how if you use the Firefox logo, you can only use that in conjunction with the legit Firefox software made by Mozilla.
So we wanted to make changes for Debian.
Yeah, we not only wanted to make changes, we wanted to allow redistributors of Debian to make changes without having to fiddle with the name. The other issue is that the particular logo image wasn't just under this trademark-related license, where if you modify the code, you have to explain to the user somehow by renaming it that it's not Firefox anymore. It was also under a restrictive copyright license, which...
That's not good for Debian.
Yeah, so that meant that we couldn't actually put the image in the Debian archive. We couldn't ship that image along with the package, whether we called it Firefox or iSqueezle. Mozilla totally fixed that copyright licensing thing years ago, but I, and presumably many others, have become very attached to the iSqueezle brand, which is this, like, amazing, white, shiny little weasel on the Earth logo. Pretty cool. So
just like a total, like, fuck you, Mozilla.
No, it's not
like, really
it's maintained by someone who at least has, and maybe does, work for Mozilla.
Oh, really?
Yes. It's amazing. Mike Hami is the maintainer of iSqueezle and does an amazing job and blogs about amazing performance improvements and, like, dynamic loader and C++ ABI speedups he's able to squeeze out. But, yeah. But that's the difference. Anyway, so the packaging system. Maybe Mike Hami and iSqueezle are a good mini case study on the packaging system. Somebody takes some software from a so-called upstream, like XLS or Firefox, and they add a few scripts around it so that they can compile that software consistently, and the compiled files get put into a .deb archive. That .deb and the original author's code plus the Debian stuff are sent to the Debian FTP servers. The Debian FTP servers build this software for other CPU architectures or other variants of the Debian distribution.
Well, that's cool, so the developers don't have to build for multiple things.
Yeah, seriously. That would be completely unreasonable. We support, I'm going to embarrass myself by not knowing the real number, but we support like 15 architectures.
Really? I know there are that many architectures, but like, are there that many architectures that are worth supporting?
Well, I don't know.
What is there worth supporting besides i386 and AMD 64?
AMD 64, also known as x86 64.
Yeah.
So, there's...
Do we support Cray?
We don't support Cray. That would be Cray.
It would be Cray.
So, my friend Noah, who's at the conference, actually fell asleep on a Cray. It wasn't powered on, but it was at the Computer History Museum in Mountain View, like, 3 weeks ago. Oh, cool.
It was closed. I only got to go to the lobby and see the Babbage machine.
We saw the Babbage machine in operation. It was pretty cool, but actually Noah fell asleep during it on the bench around the Cray.
So my father and I drove like an hour out of our way one time when driving to Los Angeles in order to go to the museum, only to find that it's not open on Friday afternoons.
Probably because they're out robbing banks. Why do you think so many bank robberies occur? Because the Computer History Museum is closed.
Packaging.
packaging. So, yeah. So
can I like make an issue somewhere where we can start supporting Cray?
Yeah. I don't remember the full process, but it amounts to you should do some work to make sure that the Debian base system builds on the architecture you want to add. And then so this is called creating a new port.
Is Cray Linux? I don't actually even know.
No. I think Cray supercomputers basically predate Linux.
Really? That's cool. Is it proprietary?
Almost definitely. It's proprietary in a lot of ways, but the hardware itself was unique and like nothing else worked the same way. So sure, I mean it's nice to be able to modify the operating system of the computer that you are using. Cray might have shared source code to the operating system. Was there an operating system? I'm not even sure there was an operating system. I don't even know.
So I have this weird thing in my mind.
I'm sure there were some libraries, though, like for doing particular computations, and I have no idea if the source code was shared, but I have no reason to think it was shared under a free software license, but it might have been shared with the users of the computer in a sort of, like, restricted way.
Because people use them, like, they do Cray things with them.
That's right.
All right, on to packages.
So,
builds for all these different ports.
Yeah, so it builds for all these different ports, and then those .deb files get placed in the Debian FTP archive, which is usually accessed not over FTP, and
that's probably for the best. FTP is really insecure right here.
Well, mostly it's slow.
That too.
But, man, the FTP protocol is really pretty amazing.
It's kind of outdated.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, FTP dev, if you're listening, I apologize.
I mean, it definitely has done a bunch of great things, and I still use it infrequently, I think?
I use it. I'm building a website, sort of. I mean, I am building a website, but I don't do it as much as I should. I use FTP to talk to the server.
Okay, good. Question mark.
I wish I used SSH or something better, but I'm lazy. No, that's SSH.
Well, I'm just it's pronouncing.
Oh, but I would use OpenSSH, don't worry.
Okay, good. Then people who run Debian might do things like apt-get install iSqueezle, and their system will download the copy of the .deb that got synchronized to the mirror that they have chosen, or the mirror that they have been efficiently selected to, based on whatever system they're using for picking a mirror, which might have been automatic, and then they download and run something. So I've given you sort of the basic shape of packaging, but there's a lot of different phases on this I can zoom in on. The one that I think is most interesting is these scripts and annotations that make the package possible are all stored in a directory made by the maintainer of the package called the Debian directory, and it's like literally Debian slash at the top of the program. And sometimes the hardest thing about making a Debian package is figuring out what dependencies are needed to run the software and to compile the software. 4 years ago, I was helping run an event to teach undergrads how to get involved in open source, and some friends of mine at DebConf, like John Stumpo, were there at the time too. And we were all trying to teach undergrads at Penn how to get involved in open source software. And one student
is Baltimore in Penn? Penn in Baltimore? Is Penn in Baltimore? Where's Penn?
It's in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
Okay, oh, that's probably why it's Penn.
That's probably why. That or the guy, William Penn.
Either way, go ahead.
So this student, after much effort, manages to compile a copy of Firefox on his own machine. And he looks at me and asks, so what do I have here now that I'm running this self-compiled version of Firefox after like 4 hours? I'm running the latest alpha, the latest beta, and I explain, no, you're running Firefox from like 20 minutes ago. He's like, whoa. So I don't think he had really realized that software changes constantly over the course of its development.
Especially open source.
That there are states that the software can be in between the releases. In his mind, it was just the releases.
Of course.
So, but the reason I bring this up is it took like 4 hours. And you had to install all this random stuff that Mozilla says you need to compile Firefox. And they were right. You needed all that stuff. But there was no automated process for doing that. So at least on the wiki, in the instructions that they suggest for humans. Point being, for Debian packages, some human editor, kind of the package, caretaker, but I mean that in a nice way, not in a, like, I don't know, death-related way. It's like a, isn't there, a, like, death?
Undertaker.
Oh, okay, never mind. Yeah, the caretaker of the software figures out what software is needed to build it, and then adds annotations in the control file in the Debian directory to say what those dependencies are for building. That's called the build dependencies. Most of the dependencies needed to run the software are actually automatically figured out by the Debian packaging system. When the package gets built, during that process, after the compile phase is finished, if it's compiled software, a helper tool looks at the compiled code and figures out what packages provide the libraries that it uses. So that's how build dependencies and dependencies work in packaging. I mean, at the packaging level. For users of such a program, it's taken care of for you by apt-get. So that list of dependencies that was figured out when the thing was compiled, those are all downloaded along with the program when you install it.
That's interesting.
Are you sure?
I know I don't sound interested, but I am.
Sam, I am.
Green-eggs and ham. Dr. Soyce.
Now I want to eat green eggs and ham with soy sauce.
With soy sauce. So, I guess my question would be, what is the difference between a .dev and a .rpm? Other than, is it anything significant?
So, I'm going to answer a different question than the one you asked. And then maybe I'll answer the question that you asked.
If I'm lucky.
What's more interesting than what I think is more interesting than the format that these files are all packed into is the question of what procedures were followed in order to put the files in place. So, and who did that, and sort of what community are they a part of? In Debian, we only package software that is fully free software. We have 1,000+ volunteers that are Debian developers that move the project along.
Or DDs.
Plus, easily, another 1,000 others who volunteer in all sorts of ways, including packaging. You can do packaging.
Or maintaining the wiki.
Like you.
Like I.
Editing the wiki. But there's lots of ways you can package software without being a Debian developer yet. You ask someone else to review and then upload your work to the Debian archive. So, usually, when you find a deb lying around, it's maintained by someone who is a volunteer for Debian or part of the Ubuntu project, both of which have pretty strong free software bases, like cultural base.
So can you not make a deb unless you're...
Oh, you totally can make a deb if you're not anything.
Okay.
You can install this program called check install, which will just, like, run whatever command you tell it, and then you tell it what directory to pack up, and then it just packs up all those files into a deb. So
I was kind of shocked if that was the case, so I'm glad it's not.
Yeah.
Very phosphorus.
Yeah. There's a big culture. Debian has maybe not even almost, elitist culture around the creation of devs, which results in maintainers of the software being too afraid to make deb files for fear they'll get yelled at, or at least stared at askew, by Debian developers. And this means that the only devs you'll find, mostly, are made by people who were thinking about packaging, and not just the authoring of software.
Do we know who maintains DuxRazor? Because there's definitely a deb for it.
Well, if the deb is in the Debian archive, then it's some Debian developer or maintainer.
I want to be the person that manages TuxRacer.
I think TuxRacer actually got renamed to Planet Penguin Racer.
Is it?
I thought so.
I believe that.
But yeah, you can maintain TuxRacer. I mean, actually, the reason I maintain Alpine, which is this mail reader, is because I'd been using Pine for like 6 years at that point and loving it. And then Pine was sort of semi-open source, and that sort of rounds down to zero in terms of open source or free software definition stuff. It's just not. But it's so close. And then the original authors of Pine made a new version of Pine that was the same as Pine, slightly less buggy, and also under an actual open source license, the Apache License 2.0.
Nice.
So as soon as I read this email release, I basically like raced to a computer. I was like, I have to register to be the person in Debian to maintain this package. Oh my god, someone else might beat me, and then what will my life be?
And then you realize no one else cares.
Well, I think I realized that like months later. But I was really excited to be able to file the so-called intent to package bug to say I was going to maintain Alpine. And actually, people do care about Alpine. One of my friends who was at this conference I first met online because he filed a bug against Alpine.
That's a good way to meet a friend.
Okay, so the TuxRacer thing. Yeah, so you could be the person to maintain software you love. That's my point, really.
That's really cool, actually. Like, do you know about the web browser Midori?
Yeah.
My friend Ryan Niebuhr maintains that for the Debian project.
How is that for him?
He hasn't done it much recently. He said he felt guilty.
Yeah, I only ever ask, how was that for you, or how is that for you, if I think the answer is not going to be good.
So, one of the things that we're going to do during our podcast is I'm going to give a word.
A word.
A big word. Hopefully one that you don't know the definition to. And if you do, then we'll edit it out and I'll choose a different one.
Oh my god.
And then you'll have to guess what the definition is.
Recording these could take years.
I mean, in theory. I don't know how big words you use. Anyways, agoraphobia.
Fear of heights.
Incorrect.
Fear of, hold on, it's totally...
Well, yes.
I know it's obviously a phobia. I've forgotten.
Alright. Agoraphobia is a panic disorder. So, I'd like to make a quick sidetrack, which is that if you Google the word agoraphobia, what you end up with is their little Google recommendation thing, but
yeah.
It reads out the following. Panic disorder with agoraphobia is an anxiety disorder in which a person... That sentence makes very little sense. Panic disorder with agoraphobia...
I think sentence is giving it too much credit.
Panic disorder with agoraphobia is an anxiety disorder. Anyways, what agoraphobia actually is. Agoraphobia is the fear of... It's similar to claustrophobia.
But it's about people?
Sort of. It's the fear of being in a place that's either hard to escape or where help might not be available. For instance, an agoraphobic would not be in such a good place if, like, their plane crashed and, like lost. Agoraphobics could never have been on the show Lost.
Oh, okay. I see. I mean, many people don't end up in good places when their flights crash. But these people would be in not good places, sort of, metaphorically, as well as literally. Also, not very many people, because not very many planes crash, but...
That's true, actually. Let's do another one. I think this is...
What?
One more.
Okay, fine.
Two a show is a good idea.
Okay.
Maybe three, though, because three is the good number, you know? Like, your stool stands up, it has three legs, not two.
Yeah.
Convividly.
Convividly?
Sure. Yeah, that word. Convividly.
Convividly. I have no idea.
Convividly is to enjoy things in a merry and festive style. But now, for the last, and in my opinion, best.
I had this vague sense that convividly was going to be about, like, socialness somehow.
Well, I mean, festivities aren't social.
Aren't?
Are.
Yeah.
So, Caliphagian. Caliphagian. There we go.
Spell that.
Maybe I'm mispronouncing it, but Callipygian.
Huh.
It's a great word. I actually knew it before looking at this list of words that I got from by Googling the phrase big words.
Caliphagian. I have no idea.
To have a shapely buttocks.
So, it sounds like it's an adjective.
I think so.
But it's, you've given me an impair...
Yeah, it's an adjective. No. No, it's not. It's a noun. It's a state of having. It's just shapely buttocks.
Oh, okay.
Caliphagus is to have a shapely buttocks.
I see, okay.
I may or may not be dropping caliphagus into my next pickup line.
What was the really good pickup line that you suggested?
So, last night at the party at Punchbowl Social, I said that we should use a baby... Are you a Zimbabwean dollar? Because you're one in a million. But then, we took that slightly further, and I said something along the lines of, hey, baby, are you a Zimbabwean dollar? Because I'd use a wheelbarrow full of you to buy bread. Or, hey, baby, are you a Zimbabwean dollar? Because I would put you up on my walls as wallpaper because you're cheaper than normal wallpaper. Or, hey, baby, are you a Zimbabwean dollar? Because I would greatly mismanage you and cause you to get inflated and fat and then abandon you for USD.
I think that was the winner.
Is that the winner?
I mean, no. The winner was like the first one that I laughed at, not these that I'm like rolling my eyes at.
The one where it's just, are you one in a million?
Yeah.
I kind of like it.
Well, I know there was one after that.
Should we give the backstory
to this?
The
first one after that. I don't know.
So the one about buying bread with a wheelbarrow. Yes. So the backstory to this is that prior to the Zimbabwean government adopting the USD, the American currency, their currency had suffered such hyperinflation that one American dollar was worth 1 million. It might even be a billion, but I'm pretty sure it was a million. Millions is reasonable. 1 million Zimbabwean dollars. Which is, so the other joke is reminiscent of pre-Hitler Germany. We have failed Godwin's law.
You know, I gave Godwin a ride to the airport once.
Godwin?
Yeah, Mike Godwin.
Really?
Yeah.
That's kind of dumb.
I mean, actually, my friend Nelson gave him a ride. I was just in the car.
I don't care. You could have just left that part out, and I still would have been impressed.
Okay, good.
I'm actually impressed either way. That's cool, Godwin. Anyways, so I think one last thing that we should talk about before we wrap up is OpenHatch.
Okay. It's something you don't want on a submarine.